WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
One of the bills that passed in the final hours of the General Assembly's 2022 session seeks to clarify the state's turn signal requirement. A fitting footnote, perhaps, to a 9-week journey in which a number of unexpected and often erratic turns sent some high-powered bills spinning into the median and cleared the way for others to reach the governor's desk. The top priority of the Republican-dominated House, legislation to upend private sector vaccine mandates, was forced into the legislative slow lane and eventually stripped of its most controversial provisions, while attempts to muzzle teachers and promote library censorship were ultimately blocked outright. On the other hand, a push to cut the individual income tax surprised many onlookers by reaching its destination, as early skepticism from the governor and the Senate's GOP majority, not to mention opposition from Democrats in both chambers, gave way to overwhelming bipartisan support. And then there's the measure that would let most Hoosiers carry loaded handguns without a permit. Its tortuous route to the governor's desk doesn't even appear on most legislative maps. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this week's show, we'll do our best to sort it all out with the General Assembly's four caucus leaders. Don't go away. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. And joining me to talk about the just-concluded 2022 session are Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat, House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican, and House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat. Let's do some role reversal here. You be the journalist for a minute and give me a headline on the just completed session. And as you know, headlines are by definition short. Rod Bray, let's start with you.
I think I would say Indiana modifies its economic development tools. Senate Bill 361 did a great job of going to help us be more competitive in recruiting businesses here to the state of Indiana.
Greg Taylor.
Headline is everybody is going to have a gun and be able to walk down the street without a permit.
Wow. Different from that headline. Well, let's see. Well, let's keep a good thing going here. Todd Houston,
I'd say successful, productive session that keeps Indiana moving forward.
You are being short. This is good. We'll keep this up the whole session. Phil Giaquinta.
Yeah, I would say missed opportunities. You know, we had the opportunity to make some really improvements with regards to education, things like that. We can discuss that as we go on with regards to the surplus that we have. So I would say missed opportunities.
Do you think in hindsight this session was really necessary? I mean, in the old days, really old days, you know, short sessions were reserved supposedly for emergencies. Was this a vital session?
Well, I think we did some fantastic things, honestly. It's been a long time since since we said just dedicated a short session to emergencies. If you look at all the bills that get filed, not all of them look like emergencies.
But I'm talking because I have the hair to prove. I remember when in those days.
I understand.
It goes way back.
Yeah, I understand. No, but I think, you know, we've had the opportunity, to, as I said, to retool our economic development is a neat thing, but you know, to make sure we're going to continue to pay down our obligations of the public employee retirement fund to the point of billions of dollars, and the tax cut we put together is a great thing for all Hoosiers.
And yeah, Greg Taylor, you issued a statement after the session adjourned, sine die, and said it was a waste of time, in part because so much time was devoted to what you described as culture wars. Elaborate on that.
Well, you know, we passed a piece of legislation, John, that is going to endanger law enforcement officers. We also passed legislation out of one house anyway that was going to put teachers in jail. I'm glad that that didn't continue. We spent a lot of time on that issue, though. But we still have issues. You know, our Hoosiers are feeling the price gouged at the pump, and we could have done something about it. Senate Democrats, along with House Democrats, offered some pieces of legislation that would have changed immediately the prices that Hoosiers would see at the gas pump, and we did not get that done. So,
well, Todd Houston, you know, back if we look back a few months ago, you know, to Organization Day, in fact, your caucus, your number one burning priority was dealing with COVID and specifically protecting employees who, for any number of reasons, didn't want to get vaccinated, and there were other things about curbing the state's or the governor's ability to to mandate certain types of public health measures. You wanted to initially do it on Organization Day. There was some pushback. You still wanted it to be done, yeah, you know, yesterday. In hindsight, are you glad it unfolded more slowly? Because in the end, the bill that ultimately was passed basically is mimicking federal law in terms of exceptions to vaccines and whatnot.
Well, I think, you know, we stood up when we needed to be standing up. And, you know, the continued federal overreach on that issue had to be stopped. Now, luckily, the court stepped in and made the determination on OSHA. But, look, we put in a state law for the first time that natural immunity is an exemption. We clarified our religious exemptions. I think that was successful. I appreciate the work of our Senate and House colleagues to continue to improve the bill, knowing the evolution that took place. But, John, I think it was the right decision in November, and pleased that we got across the finish line in March.
No mulligan request on that one. Phil Giaquinta, you, in a statement after the session, said that you think that maybe the state would be better off if this session had simply not taken place.
Well, if we are going to be here, if we are going to turn now, what I've always said, that we're turning these short sessions into long sessions. Let's really.
You finished 6 days early, though, I guess.
Well, that's true. Shorter than normal, which is kind of
nice. Basketball
so,
tournament has yeah. something to do with that.
That could be. I think the Senate probably had more had something to do with that, getting out a little bit early. Again, as I said earlier about missed opportunities, if we're going to be here, let's do some things to address the rising cost of health care. Nothing on that. How about child tax care credit? You know, if we're seeing employees going back to work, and what can we do to help those parents have kids and the cost of child care. Other opportunities with regards to, you know, when we see why Intel moving to Columbus, Ohio, not choosing Indiana is because of lack of investment in higher education. What could we have done to make college more affordable? Things like that. So, again, missed opportunities, whole list of things I think we could have done instead of maybe, as you said, talking about some of these sort of culture war issues that we seem to be getting into.
Well, how about that? The state was sitting on unprecedented surplus, upwards of $5 billion, and certainly with the revenue forecast that came out in the final week or week and a half of the session, you know, the numbers just got better and better sure. and better. Why not accommodate some of those the student debt relief, the loan debt relief, the child care credits, those types of things that Phil Giaquinta just mentioned.
So what happened this year is with the automatic taxpayer refund that automatically kicks in, we're paying $545 million back to Hoosiers. We put together, with the leadership of the speaker, $1 billion of tax cuts that are going to come in, both in the form of income tax cuts over a phased-in period of 7 years, along with the utility tax rate cut.
Elimination,
thank you, of $220 million. And so you can say, well, we should have done something on the gas tax, but we just put millions and millions, over $1 billion back into the hands of taxpayers that they can use for all sorts of things. And we have already solid investment with regard to education. And I think the minority leader at the House said that the Intel went to Ohio because of our lack of investment in higher education, which is completely untrue. There are a lot of reasons why they went there, and we were a little late to the game in trying to get that competition, but we've made some changes now that was going to make Indiana much more competitive when it comes to attracting those companies.
How confident are you that over this 7-year phase-in, that by the end of that time, Hoosiers actually will get this $1 billion-plus relief, because there are these year-over-year triggers? You have to have essentially 2% growth in income, and you certainly have to pay off the aforementioned pension debt. I mean, is that a given?
Certainly not a given. I think it's expected. The first iteration of the tax cut is a guarantee, and the others, if it comes and our economy continues to churn along like I hope it will, then we're going to have the benefit of that. If not, then we haven't put Indiana in any jeopardy, because we try to be as prudent as we can with our funds and make sure that we have enough revenue to take care of the obligations that we have and that are very important to us.
But John, I think the elimination of the utility receipts tax is guaranteed.
Yeah.
It's gone.
That's gone.
And that's to every Hoosier. I just think there's a philosophical difference.
And that's on every sewer bill, every gas bill, every water bill.
That's exactly right. And I think there's just a philosophical difference about who's going to spend people's money. And you know, what we have said very clearly is we want Hoosiers to be spending their money, not the government, not the government picking winners or losers, not the government picking selected programs. We want to make sure that Hoosiers can spend those dollars, frankly, in their communities, supporting their businesses. And we think that's a much more prudent way to do it than selecting a bunch of, you know, programs or credits.
And how about the business personal property income tax, where, you know, there was a write-down on equipment? That isn't part of
that. That isn't. I think, you know, that was obviously part of our initial proposal, something that we continue to be interested in. We think that's an important piece to continue to make Indiana, which is already the best place in the Midwest to do business, but make it, you know, one of the best places in the country to do business. And we'll continue to have those conversations across the interim, and you know, look for solutions for as part of the 2023 budget.
Greg Taylor, explain something to me. So when we talk about tax relief, if we again dial back the clock, Todd Houston was all about it from day one. Senate Republicans, not so much. They wanted to wait and see. And the governor was in that camp as well. And if my memory serves, most Democrats in both chambers were saying, irresponsible. But yet, when the votes were counted, overwhelming support from both chambers, both parties. How did you get from A to B?
Well, first of all, who wants to be on record voting against a tax cut for Hoosiers? And I think that's one part of the process that we have here in the Indiana General Assembly. We have to make those tough decisions on our votes. Senate Democrats proposed a lot of things that would have helped Hoosiers, especially when we saw that there's going to be an increase at the pump. We could have suspended our gas tax or fuel tax for just a little while so that Hoosiers could have immediate relief at the pump.
The proposal was for 3 months at least.
Absolutely.
And it's about, what, 32 cents per gallon that when you look at the state sales tax and gas tax?
Right. That's 31% on the fuel tax and then the 7% sales tax. We could have really done something to help Hoosiers right at the pump. Unfortunately, you know, we decided to give them $3.81 a check and $122 over a year. I don't think that's enough.
Still a lot of votes. Phil Giaquinta, again, not only did you see a lot of support for that final tax relief in your caucus, but you, I saw, actually said, hey, instead of 7-year phase in, why wait? Let's go 4 years. Now, that also seemed like a fairly abrupt change in tone and tenor on the part of the caucus.
Well,
explain that.
Well, a few things. One, the Senate did a better job on 10-0. It came back in a better shape, I would say, than it when it left the House with regards to the elimination of the personal business property that tax. So, which that money goes to help local governments and things like that. Is again, local governments are trying to improve quality of life, quality of place, which is also another big issue as to why. Businesses like Intel are not coming to Indiana. You know, they're looking at those type of things. By the way, it was a quote from Intel I happened to read that they're the ones that mentioned about the higher education quality of higher ed in Ohio, particularly the Columbus area. And I didn't make that up. I just read what they had said. And the speaker's right. I mean, I think the Republicans, what I've seen and what we've all kind of seen over the years, and we talk about investment. I think Chairman Brown said not really that interested in investing in a lot of I just watched his quotes again last night. Just really, frankly, not that interested, I guess, in investing these type of dollars when you have a surplus like we do, and investing in opportunities like pre-K. Let's fully fund pre-K, K through 12, make college more affordable. We got to get more students going to college. The rate's going down. We don't have enough then of a labor force that's going to be able to do these type of jobs that, like an Intel and others, that we want, that are going to be paying those higher wages. So that's where I think their issue of those that folks that have voted against a tax cut like that is that we're not doing enough on the other end, which is the investments that I think the state should be making.
And I'm sure the updated revenue forecast probably changed some minds as well, simply because the picture was even rosier than perhaps anyone had known a few weeks earlier.
And not only were we able to cut taxes for Hoosiers, both income taxes and your utility receipts tax. And by the way, the gas price problem is, I would argue, the fundamental flaw of the National Democrats, who've done everything they can to restrain supply. But I'd also say this, that we're going to pay off up to $2.5 billion more debt. We'll be in the top three states in lowest level of state debt. That gives us tremendous flexibility in the future. When we pay off the pre-96, it'll give us $1 billion more of flexibility within each annual budget. So not only are we giving back money to Hoosiers, we're giving ourselves flexibility in the future for how we invest in programs and in the things that Leader Giaquinta just mentioned.
Just one thing I would point out, just for clarity, I just looked at some data yesterday. Even though domestic oil production may not be where you want it to be, it is higher under this administration than it was under Donald Trump.
But they continue to restrain supply. We've had this on, you know, with this continued focus on a theory of trying to continue to eliminate carbon-based supplies. And look, I mean, this is the challenge we've had. I sincerely appreciate Leader Giaquinta and Senator Taylor talking about tax cuts. I hope we have this discussion next year, because I think that's a prudent discussion to always be having. I look forward. I'm going to continue to have that discussion next year. I look forward to their thoughts and ideas.
Let me ask you that. Go ahead. Let's spend the whole show talking about who to blame for gas prices.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that it's supply and demand.
We've been thrown a few curveballs with it in the Ukraine and elsewhere.
Under the Republican policies, national Republican policy, our dependence on Russian oil went up significantly than the prior administration, and we have continued to do that. If we weren't depending on Russian oil so much at this point, we wouldn't see the increase at the pump. I just want to make sure. You can look that up, statistics.
All right, I know we could spend this show and the next one, if we had one, talking about. Let me just, things we can control that are in your purview. This wasn't technically a budget session. Next year is. We just heard Todd Houston say, you hope there's discussion again of further tax cuts. My question was going to be, are we done with tax cuts for a while or not? It sounds as if very much not.
Well, I think, I hope not. We'll take a look, and if the revenue continues to come in like it has been, it gives us great opportunities. We're going to focus on making sure we give back money to Hoosiers when we can, but we're also going to focus on extremely important obligation is taking care of that public employees retirement fund, which is the one pension in Indiana that isn't fully funded right now. And we're making huge strides on that this year, but we'll continue to keep that as a focus, because that's an obligation that we have got to take care of, and we intend to take care of. We've been doing it for years. But as the speaker already said, when that is paid up in current, that frees up $1 billion a year for us as a state, and gives us opportunities to invest in different types of programs, capital improvements, but also maybe some significant tax restructuring, and we can do something transformational for the state.
And John, I think all four of us at the table agree that the READY program put $500 million in the communities across our state. I think that's an incredibly important program.
Grants for economic development.
Absolutely. We've given ourselves the flexibility through this tax package. We'll look forward to working with our colleagues. We want to make that investment again next year. You know, so look, we want to make significant investments, as Senator Bray mentioned. We updated the economic development tools so that we can attract, and I think you'll see great announcements in the next 8 months on, you know, new businesses, significant investment coming to Indiana. But I think, you know, things like the READY program, which I think has been successful, and we've given ourselves the flexibility next year to make those types of one-time investments too that I think impact all of our communities.
Now watch this segue. This is going to be good. We talk about money. Yeah. The state's biggest expenditure is, of course,
education.
How's this? So let's talk education, because those bills also were high profile. You alluded earlier to the fact that this session was about not only passing things but killing other bills. On the education front, which was more important this session for you, Greg Taylor?
Well, it was definitely about killing that divisive cultural war that we were going to create.
This is the so-called curriculum bill that would have said teaders can't.
Yeah, you can't
wade into lessons that deal with divisive issues.
You know what I'm happy to see is my colleagues in the Senate decided that was not an issue we were going to take up. We weren't going to spend a lot of time having hearings and discussing that. The supermajority in the House decided that was something they wanted to take up, and I have to commend my colleagues in the Senate for keeping that divisive piece of legislation off the board so we didn't have to vote on it.
Well, and that was one. Another one that arguably met the same fate in the same place was the notion that libraries and schools would not be protected from prosecution if they were deemed to be distributing materials harmful to a minor. Those both ended their run in your caucus. Is that as it should have been?
Well, so that you're talking about there, Senate Bill 17, which passed out of our caucus and went over to the House. It didn't get a hearing over there. I think the reason that it failed was, I think it was Senate Bill 396 at the end. Lots of different things were added into that bill. And it's in conference committee, when you do that, when you begin to add especially weighty or controversial issues, it becomes hard to get a bill across the finish line there. But with the idea of...
Will that be back? Is that going to have the same zeal behind it as the tax discussions that you've already said will be back next year?
I don't know if that comes back or not. It's entirely possible that it could.
Phil DeQuinto, are you worried that that's going to be back? And if so, will that be job one next year, killing that bill again?
Well, I'll give you one more. Having to declare your party to run for school board also.
And that was earlier in the process.
That was. And I think... There were school board members, both Republican and Democrat, came to the hearing and said, you know, we don't want this. We're a nonpartisan board, work well together, and those sorts of things. I will say one positive thing, though. I think there was a kind of a smaller issue, smaller bill with regards to allowing for public input at meetings. I think that's a good thing. I think we all would appreciate that, and we all want to listen.
That was virtually unanimous.
We want to listen to what concerns have to say.
The one thing about that whole conversation with regard to the party for the school boards, the public meetings, having input at public meetings, I mean, the conversation that went around, what we've seen over the last several months that is really important when it comes to education is, one, parental engagement, two, transparency. So the parents are engaged in that process, engaged with their school boards, engaged with their principals and teachers, and have the ability to get information if and when they need it. I think we made some real strides and successes there just in that conversation alone. That will take care of an awful lot of challenges that the state has in that regard.
Really, on 1134, one thing I did learn coming into session is all the opportunities currently that parents have to weigh in. I mean, I didn't even know. They can log in and see what the agenda looks like and what they're. So there are those opportunities already exist.
I think. John, I'll just say this. I know you're trying to wrap up this. You know, look, our caucus is always going to stand for parents. And giving, whether that's parental control and where their kids go to school, we've always championed school choice. We're going to always, champion parents being empowered, and certainly whether it's where their kids go to school, what type of curriculum they see, and there being transparency to it. And we will stand behind that all day long.
One other education bill that got a lot of attention, transgender girls will be barred from participating K-12 in athletic competition.
The ACLU has another...
You're thinking that this will be settled, the final word will come from the courts.
ACLU will take it to the next level, and they'll get more taxpayer dollars like they do every session that we pass legislation that we know as attorneys is unconstitutional.
One to go to the mat on, though, as far as you folks are concerned?
First of all, the premise of your question isn't quite right. We're not banning anybody from competing in sports.
They have to compete
in your biological
birth.
Yeah,
yes,
so if you're biological male, you have to compete in the biological male. If you're biological girl, you have to compete.
Fair enough. I'm glad you clarified that.
You can compete as a girl in male sports.
It comes down to a simple...
I think that is right.
That's right. It only goes one direction, but it's just it's a matter of...
Are you saying 14th Amendment challenge?
I just don't understand how we can do that. I've seen young ladies who can play with the guys, and I know that everybody here was thinking about the integrity of the sport. But, man, these are children. This is not adults that we're talking about. We're talking about children. And it's going to be bad, but it's going to be another ACLU win.
Now, the governor has said he intends to sign that if by now he hasn't already. One that where the question mark still exists, though, here's another segue, would, of course, be the topic we already mentioned here in the discussion. You brought it up the first thing, in fact, is the permitless carry, which took a rather unusual route. It essentially died in committee and then sort of had, if not nine lives, at least a few lives.
Shocked back to life.
Should the governor veto that? And how much damage, if at all, was this, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, this unusual route that the bill took. How problematic is that for future legislative deals?
Well, the answer is yes, he should veto the bill, and it reminds me of whack-a-mole. It keeps coming up. You hit it and popped up again here somewhere else. Superintendent Carter obviously testified against the bill and came out very strong against it. You know, one thing I was thinking about, too, you know, we talk about economic development tools. The IEDC comes to us and others and say, you know, we really need these tools to bring jobs to Indiana. Well, public safety told us, you know, we really need this tool, which is called a permit. We really need this to make for us to do our job, to make Hoosiers more safe, get guns that shouldn't be on the street off the street. And you're taking away something that helps us do our job better, helps us do our job the way it needs to be done to protect Hoosiers, and that's a bad thing. And that's why I think he should veto the bill.
Almost out of time. Last question, and you guys have barely had a chance to catch up on sleep, so I don't want to alarm you with talk of special session. But 100 Republicans within the House and the Senate, and I think both of you were signatories to a letter that called on the governor to ensure that he does call a special session if, in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down Roe v. Wade. Why is that important, and why did you want that message heard before the session?
Well, it's extremely important. It's about making sure that we have a life for young unborn children. And in the event that Dobbs comes back and the court overturns that and we have the opportunity to do something in the state of Indiana, we want to do so as quickly as possible.
And you can't call yourselves back into session?
Unless there's an emergency.
State of emergency.
All right. Just checking. That's that battle, incidentally, is yet to come. I guess that gets back underway next month, so we will be watching that court battle. Thank you all very much for being back at the table. I commend you on your leadership during the session. Hoosiers are well served by your leadership. Again, my guests have been Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray of Martinsville, Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor of Indianapolis, House Speaker Todd Houston of Fishers, and House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta of Fort Wayne. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, let me pick up on something I asked the panelists a couple times about. We know what failed this session, but we're not necessarily sure what is going to come back next session for a long session. Elaborate on that, if you would.
Well, I think we may be at a turning point. You know, we saw a lot of things happen this session that may have been expected, may not have been expected. And a lot of people thought that the pendulum might have swung as far as it could. But you know, we've got an intervening election before the next session, John, and we could end up with an even more socially conservative cadre of Republicans coming in. And this group may have no concern for nuance, as they seem to indicate in some of their campaign rhetoric. And, you know, issues like the firearms bill, the vaccines bill, where, you know, they spent the entire session working on little bits and pieces to try and make it acceptable to both sides of the aisle and even within just the majority caucuses, may go out the window. If you get a number of new, particularly socially conservative members in, even more so than you've got today, and these people seem to indicate that they've got no patience for leaders waiting on things.
How about the governor? His role this session, how significant?
I think there were a lot of people that were wondering where he was throughout the session. He really said, well, I'll wait till the very end to see, you know, what language comes out on a lot of things. And he really didn't weigh in publicly on much except the tax bill. And then in the end, he kind of came in with some specifics in literally the last 4 days and saw the numbers that he was looking at and the particular provisions that he preferred end up in the final provisions.
All right, Ed, we have to leave it there. Thanks, as always, for your insight. We've heard from legislative leaders. Now we'll get another perspective from journalists who cover the session day in and day out on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Until next week, take care.